Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. It's a pleasure to bring Dan Levitt in to talk with us. He's co-authored a book with Mark Armour, and it's called Intentional Balk. And let me tell you a little bit about Dan Levitt. He was with us a few years ago. He's written four critically acclaimed books and dozens of essays illuminating the role of managers, owners, and players in shaping baseball culture and history. He's an occasional MLB Network TV guest commentator, a regular speaker at Sabre's annual convention, and has presented at the Cooperstown Symposium on Baseball and American Culture. Dan is the author of The Battle That Forged Modern Baseball, The Federal League Challenge and Its Legacy. And, of course, we had him on talking about the impact of the front office in baseball and how it changed over the years. So a pleasure to welcome Dan back. Dan, how are you?
Very good. Great to be here.
Yeah, the name of the book is Intentional Balk, which we're seeing a few balks this year. The title is Baseball's Thin Line Between Innovation and Cheating, and that's the key to the story. So tell me how this came about for you and why Intentional Balk.
Well, you know, Mark and I are historians, and we've always been interested in sort of why things come together the way they do. And, well, there's been a lot of different sort of cheating scandals in the last few years, whether it's the Astros and the sign stealing or the sticky stuff on the baseball. But, you know, the stories are all sort of told one off. And what we were really looking to do is look at cheating holistically. What are the connections between various types of cheating? What are the reactions between them? There were the connections between them. And there's just a lot of interesting stuff, the context. And as we started looking at that story, one of the things that was interesting was the idea that innovation, there's just this, as our subtitle says, there's this fine line between cheating and innovation and in the way that, you know, new innovations, new things come along. And all of a sudden, somebody figures out a way to take advantage of those and get ahead, sometimes by pushing over the line a little bit.
Well, Dan Levitt is with us. Intentional Balk, B-A-L-K. Yes, Intentional Balk is the name of the book. And as Dan says, it's baseball's thin line between innovation and cheating. I really enjoy the way the book is set up and the different chapters. And it really was an eye-opener for me to realize how much of manipulation of the rules, whether legal or illegal, has gone on since the beginning of baseball. So let's talk about a couple of the different chapters. One is the first one, and it's called Deception. What about that?
Well, deception is interesting because that has to do with trying to, you know, get away with something, usually considered in front of the umpire. So thinking of trapping a ball on the outfield and then holding it up. Or a first baseman who historically many have been taught, Ed Cranepool talks about this in some old articles, about pulling your foot off the base too quickly off first base when you're taking a throw. And one of the interesting about deception is that most people, and we use a lot of quotes from Rogers Hornsby, the Hall of Fame second baseman who then spent another 30 years in baseball, most players do not consider that cheating, and most fans don't either. I mean, I think you want your team to hold up the ball and show that you trapped the ball and caught it. And so, you know, is that cheating or not? I mean, I think that's one of sort of the interesting things that we talk about. And the other thing about that is, too, is that since, you know, video replay and being able to challenge calls, a lot of that's gone away. This whole idea, you know, if you trap a ball, you really don't have to try and sell it because the camera's going to catch whether or not you did it or not. The phantom double play is another one where the second baseman, you know, may not actually be touching second base when he's catching the ball. For years, umpires sort of let that go as long as it wasn't too blatant to protect the runner, to protect the fielder because the runner might be sliding in high. You can't get away with that anymore. So deception is sort of trying to put something over on the umpire.
Yeah, I can see it, and I guess it's going to change next year, perhaps, maybe the year after, when we may get rid of pitch framing, which also is deception for me, in trying to, you know, pull a ball out of the strike zone into the strike zone. So that should really fit in this chapter.
Yeah, and we do. We talk a little bit about pitch framing in the chapter, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I don't think anybody really considers pitch framing cheating. But on the other hand, you're trying to, you know, make what could be a ball if you're a catcher call the strike. So, you know, we have sort of doctrines and talk about sort of theories in the book. And one of our theories is that a lot of there's been quotes from players saying that, you know, if it's okay if you're trying to get something over on the umpire, because it's the umpire's job and the other team's job to catch you. And if you can put something over on them, that's okay. But if you're doing it behind the scenes, maybe like corking a bat, for example, then that's not okay. So there's a lot of different nuance to this, which made the story kind of fun, that not every cheating has the same sort of rationale or issues behind it.
No, absolutely. The book is Intentional Balk and goes through the history of baseball and how all these things came about. Binoculars and telescopes, and that's important for Giant fans. In 1951, of course, the Giants are accused of having that telescope in center field where Willie Mays made the catch and relaying signs perhaps to Bobby Thompson. And Joshua Prager, I think, wrote a long book about that. What about binoculars and telescopes? Even the White Sox, I remember there was a problem in Old Comiskey that they were in the scoreboard watching signals.
Right. No, the most interesting thing I think that we found, aside from a lot of really fun stories of how people were doing it, is that there was no rule against sign stealing using mechanical means. John McGraw, the great manager of the Giants in New York for the first third of the 20th century, basically said, you know, if you're doing something by your wits, that's okay. Like, you know, picking off the sign from second base. But if you're using artificial means, that's not okay. So that became what we call the consensual ethic. And we talked a little about that, sort of like an unwritten rule, but we don't use the term unwritten rule because of the connotations with unwritten rule. But there was this consensual ethic that you weren't allowed to steal signs using binoculars or a telescope from the outfield, but there was no rule against it. Just going back to your White Sox comment, you know, Paul Richards, the manager of the Orioles in the 50s, complained to the AL president that the White Sox were stealing signs. And in just sort of this great response in terms of historical and just showing sort of how people looked at it, Will Herridge, who's the AL president, said, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, you know, there's nothing, it's not illegal, and there's nothing we can do about it. And even if it was illegal, I'm not sure what the umpire could do. So the baseball and the NL has sort of a similar situation to that in the early 60s, where one of the Cubs general manager complained about sign stealing. And he said, well, I'm not even really bothered going to complain anymore because there's no rule against it. So what can we do? So even though everyone thought it was wrong, it wasn't against the rules. So it was very interesting, sign stealing in the 20th century.
No, I agree. I remember Al Worthington, believe it or not, who was traded to the White Sox, didn't want to pitch for him, because they did do this in the scoreboard. And I remember that was revealed at some point as well. So always an interesting part of baseball. And it came up really this season with the Giants and the first base coach, Antoine Richardson. And the Dodgers complained he wasn't in the coach's box. And, of course, you're allowed to be out of the coach's box as long as you're not closer to the field. And the basis of that complaint was that he would be able to steal signs from the catcher if he was out of the coaching box. And they had to go through the whole rule, and that was a whole big deal in a weekend series.
Well, just more generally, what's kind of funny about that is that baseball has this gigantic rule book, and the rule book is gigantic because, you know, people like starting with John McGraw and before him, you know, even up to now, people are looking for ways to get around it. They're studying the book, you know, trying to get a loophole. So if there's a way to sort of sneak off first base to get a better look at the catcher sign, you know, people will do that. And then, you know, the rule book will be changed to say you can't sneak off, you know, you can't step off out of the coach's box that way. So part of the rule book is so complicated is because they have to keep closing these loopholes.
Well, we had a couple other things actually turn into, you know, court cases, and it's in the espionage chapter with, of course, what happened with Houston and St. Louis and an employee going from one to the other and taking secrets with him and stuff like that. How about that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and what's interesting there about sort of the innovation is that up until all these teams had databases, you know, and the new computer systems, there wasn't really any corporate espionage that would really make much sense. I mean, doing some sort of a Watergate breaking and entering and, you know, stealing scouting reports probably was sort of beyond what anybody would try and do. But, you know, Chris Correa, the St. Louis Cardinals, hacked into the Houston Astros database and pulled out a lot of pretty, you know, was able to look at a lot of pretty valuable information once the FBI got involved, because it was sort of viewed as a corporate hacking situation. I think Correa was sentenced to 46 months in jail. So, you know, that's a pretty good deterrent for that going forward. And just as an aside, one of the things that we talk about is that when you have a situation where the penalties don't match the opportunity, like if there's a good opportunity where it's an opportunity to cheat and it's really hard to be caught, or if you're caught, the penalties are fairly low, that's when you sort of get these chaotic and controversial situations. If you have something that's where the penalty matches the crime, if you will, at that point, generally you have a situation that's in equilibrium and that makes sense. It's only when you have these, like sign stealing in the 20th century, where you have where you're out of whack between the value of the cheating and the penalties or the possibility of being caught.
Well, that's sort of the Houston Astros had learned that lesson the hard way. Believe me, they did. And with the trash cans, and you have a chapter on that, the smart watches and trash cans. Dan Levitt is with us, and I said Dan is a treasurer of Sabre as well, and has done a number of wonderful things in the baseball world and the baseball research world. The book is Intentional Balk and really covers the gamut of baseball for so many years of how all these things happen. One that I like, and, you know, being in San Francisco, we see a lot of, I don't know if you want to call them roster shenanigans, but there's a lot of manipulation of that 40-man roster of players going up and down and options and all that kind of stuff. And I remember in the early 50s when you had the bonus rule, where if you got over $4,000, you had to be carried on the team for 2 years. And money was under the table to different young men. Automobiles were given to people to get around the rule. How about that? The roster shenanigans of all these historical moments.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we try and highlight is that cheating is by everybody. Not when I say everybody, I don't mean that everybody cheats. I mean that any type of person can be doing it, whether it's a player, a GM, a manager. You know, these are really, really competitive people, and they really, really want to win. And so, yeah, the bonus rules in the 50s were one that just sort of led themselves to that, because you sort of had these pay restrictions. There's the great story of, you know, Jim Russo, the super scout of the Orioles, talks about one scene of a train going through Texas and people trying to hand off $100 bills through the train window while it's moving, and the $100 bills sort of floating all over the countryside. And, you know, we've seen this recently with the Latin America signing, you know, ballplayers from Latin America. The Braves GM only several years ago was banned for life for illegally, you know, doing illegal things down and trying to sign players in Latin America. You know, how he was, you know, violating the rules around Latin American signing. So, it's been going on for a long time. And, you know, as of recently, and it's still going on as of, you know, several years ago when he got banned.
Well, I remember Deacon Jones, and of course, a wonderful hitter. He hurt his shoulder. Told me the story of being involved with Frank Lane and the Chicago White Sox. And Deacon said, "I really like your Cadillac." And as part of getting around the bonus system, Frank Lane said, "Here are the keys. It's yours." And that was one. I remember that story from the great Deacon Jones. Well, the book really concludes with a lot of the typical things of today. Juicing the ball, whether it's juicing the body, greenies, whatever it was, that aspect of it that became a society issue as well and a legal issue as well, but you do cover that pretty well.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, all of these issues are wider issues. I mean, the idea of sort of trying to take an advantage to get ahead is not obviously limited to baseball, and it's not even limited to sports. But, yeah, we try to talk a little bit about how amphetamines were viewed, how steroids were viewed. I mean, clearly, just talking about the penalties versus the opportunities available, that was steroids in the 90s, right? I mean, if you took steroids, you could theoretically become a much better player. Not, maybe not a much better, but it would help enhance your performance. And yet there was no testing. So there was no way to know, there was no penalty effectively for it. So that is where you end up in these crazy situations where, you know, you get people sort of worried about the integrity of the game because you have what's viewed as a problem and there's not really a way to solve it. So we talked a little bit about, you know, changing mores around different types of cheating. And again, yes, around the more recent stuff, such as steroids, sign stealing, putting, you know, sticky stuff on the ball. And yeah, there's just a lot going on. The sticky stuff is a great story. Just the one part about the spider tack, which is sort of the key sticky stuff that people use. You know, that was invented for these World's Strongest Man competitions where people were trying to carry giant stones and pitchers realized that, wow, that sticky stuff is going to help us get some spin rate on the ball. So, yeah, I mean, it's always evolving.
Well, you know, it's interesting for me, and I really enjoy the book, and you can tell from this discussion over the history of baseball how many times players and owners and everyone have tried to get around the rules, whether written or unwritten, to try to get a competitive advantage, and that's the thin line between innovation and cheating, and that's the point of the book. But it really covers just about every situation. Dan Levitt is the author, L-E-V-I-T-T, and Mark Armour is his co-author, and as I said, both have won numerous awards in the baseball research world. So we support our local bookstores. We have the Book Tree up in Montclair. And, of course, I'm sure you could get it at all the usual outlets. How is the book being received, Dan?
Pretty good. You know, it's only been out for about a month now, but I think we've had a lot of excitement. One of the things that I've really been excited about, Mark and I have been excited about, is it seems to sort of have a little bit of resonance beyond just sort of the hardcore baseball fans that our previous books have really been designed for. It seems to have a little bit of a wider audience. So hopefully that continues to grow and happen.
Well, it's all part of life in the world we live in today. Our value systems are being challenged all the time. And the beauty of baseball, the pristine idea of baseball, is being challenged on a daily basis. So baseball, I always say that if you want to look at U.S. history, just look at baseball. Because everything that ever happened in the country happened on the baseball diamond. So this is part of America, and I look at it that way.
I think that's true. I mean, I think it's sort of human nature to try and figure out if there's an advantage that can be gained, and each person has their own sort of personal line of how far they'll go up to the line and go over it. And this is a great example of all the different ways that people have tried to do that over the years.
Do you have a favorite chapter, by the way, in the book? And as I said, all the chapters relate to some aspect of espionage or getting around the rules to get this competitive advantage. Do you have a favorite one for you?
You know, I think the binoculars and telescopes, because it was just this whole idea that in the 20th century that there was actually no rule against using binoculars to steal signs, and just sort of the history of how different people tried and how people tried and how others in baseball tried to stop them despite the lack of a rule, and how there was a lot of pronouncements among baseball people all the time about you can't do this, but no one ever put in a rule, and so someone would do it the next year. It's just a really interesting story. One other story that in the book that I found interesting relative to the drug side, if you have one more minute, was that the first drug scandal really came in 1951, and I hadn't seen this story before, that Hal Newhouser, who was the MVP of the league for the Tigers in 1945 when they had won the World Series, it turned out that he had been taking Novocaine shots in his shoulder to be able to pitch. And when this came out in 1951, there was all these headlines that were very different. Like some were, you know, Tigers doped to win flag. And others were just like, you know, Newhouser took Novocaine shot. And I think that really started this debate over, what kind of drugs were okay and which ones weren't, which eventually led to, I think, where we are today, sort of restorative drugs, you know, cortisone shots, that's okay, but PEDs aren't. But, you know, where exactly that line is, who knows?
Well, that's a good question. And, of course, we have a great home run race in 2022. And the great Mickey Mantle in 1961 went and got a booster shot from Mel Allen's physician, and it caused an abscess. And of course, Roger Maris hit 61 and Mickey hit 54. But everyone wondered, what was in that booster shot? I think that's along the lines of what you're talking about.
Good.
Dan, great to have you with us. It's a pleasure, and you guys, you and Mark, do a great job, and you're one of the best in the business, so I appreciate having you on.
My pleasure. Always great to be here.
All right, that is Dan Levitt, L-E-V-I-T-T, the book Intentional Balk. More coming up, KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.